This is the Overclocked Podcast, a regular dose of video game music and conversation from OCRemix.org.
This week, we learn the facts of Sonic Beats with Funk Fiction, ride an unstable roller coaster of asymmetrical meter through Laura and Travia's newest installment of Between the Lines, and put a new spin dash on Sonic music with a playlist of remixes. Hello, Steven, and how are you doing today on November?
Shouldn't open with that, huh?
Hello, Steven, and how are you doing today on December 1st?
Hello, Brian. Not bad at all. I think that there's Christmas cheer in the air. It's December time for the Christmas special.
Jingle-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
This week, we interview Santa Claus about his favorite Santa Claus music, which is Here Comes Santa Claus Down Santa Claus Lane. Have a batch of remix rewinds all about Christmas music, and finish off with a segment from Santa Claus about Santa Claus.
Ho, 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 ho.
All right, maybe it's not time for the Christmas special. This is all my fault.
But yeah, hello everyone. Really, this time, it's not Christmas time yet. Christmas starts December 5th. I'm just going to be weirdly like, what would you say?
Persistent about that.
Yeah, and insistent
about that.
I just
can't believe the neighbors are putting out their inflatable Santa Clauses on December 4th.
I'm going to be equally outraged with anyone who doesn't have stuff out by December 6th. So I'll let you know how it goes.
That's great. Okay, well, that's completely irrelevant, but it was a good chortle. So this is kind of a Sonic-themed episode for the most part, because we've got Funk Fiction, who did the music to the Sonic the Hedgehog fan games, which were after and before the sequel, independently.
That's not confusing.
Two games. He did some of the music for those, which is very neat. He's also been doing some remixes of Sonic Mania and whatnot. You might have seen us retweet that recently.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the playlist is going to be all kinds of remixes from Sonic the Hedgehog. So it's basically just me doing my normal thing as I plan the show.
Yeah, fantastic. And of course, Laura's segment is going to be entirely about Sonic, right?
You know, I wish I could say yes. I do, but not really. In fact, it's about something that you know all about, Brian, asymmetric meter. Maybe just to sort of preface the segment and get us going into this episode, could you explain the definition of asymmetric meter and how it applies to modern music?
So asymmetric meter is basically like you have symmetric meter and then A.
It's kind of hard to argue with facts. And today,
it
Brian
really
has.
Is. Okay. Yeah, you know, I have been known to synthesize complex topics into not complex topics.
All right, I'll run it by Laura and see what she thinks.
Otherwise known as A-complex.
Okay, I've had enough of this intro. It's been very bad. But we'll catch up with you guys at the end of the show. And for now, we're going to head over to the Remix Rewind. Let's look at the step with me, listener, into a quarter of chimes, shimmering and sparkling alongside a chorus of magical sounds, including an actual chorus. Rebecca Etrip uses her particular blend of magic to bring Chrono Trigger to life with Zeal Breeze, a mix both fair and perilous, and flooded with mystery.
Thank you. are you ready to sit back and let some monkeys serenade you with a woodwind-infused dreamscape from heaven itself?
Yes!
Rebecca Tripp is back again to give you just that, with her second remix of the week, Forest Blast. It's just an excerpt from her full Donkey Kong Country 2 medley, so be sure to check out our interview all about it.
In the overclocked legends of old, long before this podcast was in any way a thing, there lived a man called McVath. On his brow was wisdom, and in his quiver groove, and lo, boy, did he light this here scene aflame. Now he returns with Launch the Cow, an Earthworm Jim jam that promises new adventures to come.
Dancing with spiders sounds like just about the worst way to spend an evening, but Vasi and Tiago get those eight legs moving with their Undertale remix, Chaos Cookies and Cider. Guitar solos rip through this D&B dance piece with satisfying grit, and prove once more that Undertale is pretty much infinitely remixable. ¶¶
Ocean Andrews leaps out of a moving car with electric guitar held overhead, rocking the world with a new, edgy sound forged from the fires of cool. What else would you expect from a Symphony of the Night mix that crashes together synth and metal in an auditory explosion named Legacy of Darkness?
Sturm has an important question for you. Are you badass?
I bring chaos, I bring destruction. My ion body is invincible mind.
Chernabog, Brandon Strader, Ferrillis, Tubers McGee, and Murby will leave you pondering this existential question while simultaneously melting your bad face off with a very bad remix of Sturm's theme. If you want more ludicrous bad guy metal, check out the three badass boss theme albums from OC Remix. Perhaps there you can find an answer to that ultimate question. Are you badass? Enough to save the president?
All of these remixes and more, head over to ocremix.org. Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Intune Interview. It's the part of the show where I find someone from the video game music world and talk to them for about 30-ish minutes or so. I'm Steven, your usual host, and today we have Funk Fiction, who has released Sonic Beats in the not-so-distant past.
Hey, thanks for having me. Sonic Beats is the 10 tracks I wrote for Sonic after the sequel, the 7 tracks I wrote for Sonic before the sequel, which came first in 2012, after the sequel came out in 2013. And then also in 2013, the OCR album, Temporal Duality, for Sonic CD came out. Sonic Beats has one track from that, which is a remix of both Metallic Madness and Special Zone in Sonic CD. That's Crystal Duration, which is actually the first track of the album. Just kind of hit things off with that one before exploring the 10 tracks from Sonic ATS, and then the remaining 7 tracks from Sonic BTS. So it's an 18-track album. As an artist, I go by Funk Fiction. My name is Pejman. And I am from Los Angeles, born and raised. And I kind of picked up music late in my life, senior year in high school. Picked up piano formally, classically, for 3 years, and then was making beats on Fruity Loops, if you will, for 3 years.
The classic story.
Yeah. And I actually didn't even like have a MIDI keyboard. I just made music with a mouse for like years. And
was really doing
the classical piano thing for a few years to get just mildly proficient and have an idea of what I'm doing. Got really obsessed with the whole music and music making process and went to music school, not really for the degree, but just to get good and catch up. And, you know, over those years, my ear developed to the point of just, you know, having a trained ear and being able to hear sounds, melodies, chords, and know what to do with them. And the production side of stuff was really self-taught. But the theory and ear training was really enriching going to school for. Although, of course, I'm sure you could just replace school with a one good tutor who could, you know, help you out with that stuff. But that's the music upbringing stuff or side of things. And I mean, playing Sega Genesis or Super Nintendo since you're 5 years old really helps and kind of influences your music aesthetics and your taste. And, you know, you find yourself being 5 years old and humming Green Hill Zone and Marble Zone. And that's like first melodies you're ever humming. I think music really goes hand in hand with video games in terms of not just mine, but a lot of people's upbringing of our generation who's into video game music. Yes, lastly, I would say the Funk Fiction project that I came up with about 6, maybe 7 years ago was aimed to be a spiritual successor to the band Jamiroquai, which is a UK funk band, one of the best. Okay. I can never recommend them enough. And I think all of that, the video games and Jamiroquai and just my own sensibilities rolled up into a ball, is kind of what you get with Funk Fiction. You pick me up, then you pop me down. Can't seem to find my way around you. See what you think, well, you don't think it now. You lost my love, but someone found it. Now when the rain falls upon my, don't think of you or much at all. Just one thing seemed to make you care. Who's gonna drive and take you home? I totally hear all those influences, even though I'm not super familiar with that group. There's funk in and out of everything I've heard from Sonic Beats. Like, it has a really unique sort of like texture to it, where it sounds like familiar Sonic stuff, but then all of these influences that even sound like they came from the 70s are like popping their head, and it's pretty nuts. Yeah, it's kind of like breathing new life into retro. Like, we didn't get enough of it and we evolved too soon into other stuff. I want more of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the philosophy of Sonic Mania as a game too, so I feel like this is the right time to bring that out. So I guess, like, was the first Sonic the Hedgehog your first Sonic game?
Yeah, I just I think my dad just like randomly popped into the through the door with a big black box, and it was Sega Genesis with a picture of Sonic on it. I'm like, what is this? What's going on? And
that's wonderful.
My life would never be the same again. Rocked my world.
That's so cool.
I could just keep dying at Green Hill Zone and like not care. It was just the best. And like, just getting to Marble Zone was like a huge achievement, and I think it took me a year to even ever pass Spring Yard Zone, so I was fine with those three levels for
more replay. But
yeah, you just had your one game.
I know. I mean, for me, it was the same with Sonic CD. That was my first Sonic game.
Whoa!
And
I would have been so jealous of you.
Talk about a weird entry to the series. Yeah, like, unorthodox. I just skipped right over the Genesis and got to the weird one.
Yep.
And I've told the story too many times on the podcast, so I swear I won't go through the whole thing all over again.
That's okay.
But I had that moment of putting the disc into a CD player and discovering there are two soundtracks to the game.
Whoa. It's the equivalent of finding treasure.
It really was. It really was. But that's why I'm so happy with projects like Sonic Mania and like Sonic Beats. I kind of thought that everyone had forgotten about Sonic CD. It was sort of the black sheep of the series. But
yeah,
now
it's
coming back.
Yeah. I guess part of it I always thought was the animation in Sonic CD. It was just the perfect embodiment, the perfect artistic expression of what Sonic is about and looks like.
Oh, man, I completely agree. It's so, like, vivid and just cool,
yeah.
And stylish in a way that, like, other games did not touch.
Yeah, I mean, in that time, in its heyday, like, Sonic was the coolest thing on the planet. It just oozed cool.
So for people who haven't played them or even heard of them before, what is Sonic Before and After the Sequel all about, and how do you start writing music for them?
Sonic Before the Sequel, which is what started it all, as the name aptly puts it, it takes place before the sequel, and the sequel being Sonic 2. And so it takes place between 1 and 2, fictionally, like it's like fictional canon. And it's the, you know, the story that goes on there, and that was developed by a Brazilian developer, Lake Feppard, which is kind of a spoonerism for fake leopard. And Lake was friends with Falk, who was pretty much taking care of the soundtrack, but it was such a large soundtrack that he recruited me, James Landino, and Andy Tunstall, the four of us, to score the soundtrack to that game, because, you know, it was just a really big soundtrack. I think it was over 40, maybe 50 tracks.
Yeah.
And Falk took care of most of it. That guy is a workhorse, of greatest work ethic ever. And, you know, he really pushed us all, because his production was really top-notch. And I think especially, you know, the other three of us, we really stepped up our game and did a lot of research and production and mixing and mastering, and also just pushed our creativity farther than we ever did, because we're all like passionate Sonic lovers. And when you're writing music for something you're just in love with, that's going to bring out the best in you that you didn't even know was there.
So, comparing your work on the first game before the sequel and then after the sequel, did you do anything different, or did you kind of try to continue the same thing you had going?
A little of both. I think in terms of production, it was actually halfway through composing for ATS where I kind of stepped up and learned some tricks that, like, that's very standard actually now, but at the time, like, not every producer was using sidechain compression, which really became popular when Justice came out with Cross in 2007. I'm not sure if you know, familiar with that album, but
not really. And in fact, I'm not super familiar with the concept either. So how does that work?
It's a production mixing trick where you can have one sound, whenever it's sounded or triggered, make other sounds adhere to it and kind of duck or become quieter just for that.
Oh, gotcha.
Just for that very brief split second moment of when, like, say a kick drum sounds, the other sounds will get quiet just to, like, let the kick drum even cut through more punchy and like, gives it more of a pumping sound.
Right, right.
It was originally meant for radio broadcasting, actually, so that a radio host could speak over the music, and only whenever the radio host would speak, that's when the music would get quieter, because the voice of the host would be the source of which the music is sidechained to getting compressed. whenever the host would speak. So it would, like, as soon as the host would stop talking, the music's volume would come right back up, start talking, the music ducks down to make room for you to talk. That, and it got turned into a dance music or even pop music production trick, meant to be used within good taste, that later became just this what kind of, like, exaggerated pump, which is its own aesthetic, but, you know, there is an art to balancing it and, like, having it be tasteful and not exaggerated, but, you know, that's totally subjective.
Right. And for, I guess, as an example for listeners for that technique, I say I'm not familiar with it. I just didn't know it by name.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually what, you know, we use for our radio-like spots when we're talking about, you know, the recent Remix Rewinds and the for the playlist at the end.
Yeah, that's what it was pioneered or invented for.
Yes, it's very useful. So here's actually a side question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite Sonic soundtrack out of all of them?
Yeah, I mean, I think from our talk, it might be obvious that it's Sonic 3.
Sonic 3.
And it might be the Michael Jackson vibe in it.
Yep, I can't really argue with that. I definitely have a soft spot for the Sonic Adventure games. I also love Sonic and the Secret Rings more than perhaps anyone else on the planet.
Nice.
I think that's so good, but Sonic 3 is way, way up there.
It's king. I'm in awe of that soundtrack.
It's almost unfairly good. Like, you look back on it, and how could that all be running on the Sega Genesis? It just doesn't seem...
It's very symphonic in nature. I mean, it's funky as hell, but...
Yeah.
It's almost akin to Castlevania 3, where you have multiple melody lines. Like, you have your top melody, and then you have your counter melodies in the mids, and then you have a bass line. So at any given moment, you have three or four independent melody lines on all cylinders just going off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so harmonious and rhythmic.
Yes.
And perpetual and complex, but catchy and simple at the same time. I think it's divine, to put it poetically.
Yep. I couldn't have said it better. It's demonstrated maybe best with Hydro City. Yep. or Hydrocity Zone, whichever you like to call it.
Yeah.
It's so seemingly complicated, and there are at least like three or four incredibly compelling things going on at once, but none of them distract from each other. They all just fit together perfectly.
They complement each other perfectly.
They
yeah,
do.
And it's so musical and rhythmic and catchy. Hydro City Act 2 is by far the best Sonic song ever. It's like,
yeah,
it's like the gold standard.
And yeah, that kind of spirit really seems to be alive in Sonic Beats, which just makes me so happy. Like, there are so many hooky and, like, compelling rhythmic and melodic little moments in this soundtrack. I've been listening to it kind of on loop for the past couple of days while I'm working on the computer, while I'm exercising, that kind of stuff. And I'll be walking through, you know, the house, headphones off, just humming through about a 15-second loop of one of the songs just over and over again, because it just kind of works on its own. It's when you're writing this stuff, do you tend to focus on one specific, like, melodic or rhythmic element and build the rest of the song around that? Or, like, how do you manage these multiple layers of, you know, sound?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's a really sweet compliment.
Oh, and, you're welcome. Yeah.
And to answer your question, I don't know how conventional this is. It seems like I get a different answer from every different writer, but with me personally, it almost always starts out with chords. I don't write a melody first, because chords dictate the harmonic content and emotion that you're
right.
That because the chords can change. You can have a melody, but depending on the chords, you can completely eradicate or change or alter the context of the same melody, same unchanged mm-hmm. melody line. This is something you learn quickly when you get into music writing. And
right.
So, and I'm just like a chords guy. I like, and then it's, you know, chords and bass line and beat, or chords, right. beat, and then bass line. And once I got that going, then the melody just kind of comes out, like it like begs you to do this melody to these chords.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a melody by itself at first is kind of abstract. Well, it could be anything, you know, it's a little wishy-washy in terms of its direction, but chords and bass really ground and get hard-nosed about what you're trying to convey musically or express. Mm-hmm. So once that's set up, all the melodies and secondary melodies just, they just come, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, I'm sure even though you're not super experienced or like you said with music making, but you have some mm-hmm. experience, you know, when you got like 40 seconds of music going, you just kind of play it. You don't know what you're going to write next, but you listen back to it. And once you reach that 40 seconds, like your brain or your mind just plays the rest of it. It continues where it leaves off. And then mm-hmm. you can kind of hear it in your head, what it wants you to do. And in that sense, it just writes itself.
And kind of finding those initial chords kind of gives you the vibe or the feeling. Yeah, or, like you said, the purpose.
The foundation or the backbone. It's like the bedrock of the music.
And it's something we can learn from Sonic 3, because you look at something like the first stage, Angel Island Zone.
Yeah.
It has two acts, and both of them have completely a different emotional context.
Yeah.
But they're technically the same song, kind of. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So now that you have these, you know, BTS and ATS projects wrapped up, is there anything else Sonic in your, you know, present or future?
Well, I'm juggling a few projects right now. I am writing the soundtrack to a new sci-fi exploration puzzle game called Epitasis, which not a common word, but it kind of like epitome. It's a Greek word meaning intense or most intense. It's like a climax of a play where there's like a exposition, a climax, and a resolution. So Epitasis is like the most intense part of a story is what that means. But I'm writing the soundtrack to that. We got that fortunately successfully kickstarted. We were, I think, aiming for like 12 grand and we ended up raising 14. So that extra bit of funding is going towards VR too, which will be very appropriate because it's just a beautiful, like artistically, visually stunning game. The creator, Lucas Govatos, he's almost single-handedly making the game, both in terms of artistic design and programming. And so I'm writing the soundtrack, and I'm very lucky and happy to be a part of it. And so that's kind of taking up a lot of my time right now. But aside from Epitasis, I will be releasing my first Sonic Mania remix about a week from now.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. He, Lopez, did such a good job on Mania. Honestly, it might be, after Sonic 3, like Sonic Mania might be up there with my arguably favorite Sonic soundtrack.
That's huge praise. That's very cool.
He's
What do you like about Mania? Like, what caught your ear with that soundtrack?
Okay, well, I guess what remix am I coming out with that I like felt compelled to do first before anything? Was Press Garden Zone Act 2.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Press Garden Zone was kind of a special moment for me in that game because it was the first stage that I sort of explored without having heard about it beforehand. I had already kind of seen the first few stages from the game, and so when that one popped up, I had heard nothing from it, I had seen nothing from it. It was like something I never experienced.
It was purely novel. Like, yeah, no, there was no hype for it or marketing for it. It was just you play the game and you experience it. It's like, whoa, this level though is something
nobody
else.
How did they even think of it?
it's really nuts. Special, and just all the animations in it too. All the cherry blossom petals like floating around and the snow, and it's just the art and design.
So, yeah, what was it about the music that did
it? Well, I liked in Act 2, I just liked the kind of Far East element it had. It, like, mm-hmm. with the shakuhachi or, like, kind of the Japanese pan flute sound. You know, it had like a little bit of a mysteriousness to it, along with like its chords, and it touches a nerve, and it's a good one. And also, I got to give it up for that solo melody that's in like in the middle of Press Garden 2, that like synth lead. I think it's one of the most genius and true-to-life Sonic melodies, like, ever. And I can't believe T. Lopez was, like... I mean, it's already clear how good he is, but he really outdid himself with that melody. I can't get enough of it. So, had to remix that one.
That's wonderful. Anything else you want to plug before we head out?
No, I guess not yet. I'm trying to juggle some stuff that I'm working on that's still under non-disclosure and the other, as far as that, I'm just trying to find some time to do some more personal remix projects. I've had my eyes to do like Wave Race and Streets of Rage for a long time, and those definitely deserve a Funk Fiction treatment, and
yes.
I can't wait to get some, you know, make some time and pump those tributes out.
Super cool. So where can people find those if they want to hear what you're up to?
I mean, all the standard socials. My website is clearly spelled funkfiction.com. So, you know, all the socials are on there. And, you know, I'm on your Facebooks and Twitters and SoundCloud and YouTube.
Just search the internet for Funk Fiction. Something will come up. You'll find your way home.
Yeah. And definitely on Spotify too.
Nice.
Get nice. More and more popular, and a lot of good stuff on there.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think we are going to have to call it a day now. Obviously, I can talk about Sonic for kind of forever.
Yeah, I've got another 13 hours in me.
But for the sake of me needing to edit this in a timely fashion,
yeah,
let's call it a day. But thanks again for stopping by. It was fantastic to be able to talk about this. I've really enjoyed the album.
Thanks. Feelings mutual. I really was happy to be on here, and thanks so much for having enjoyed the album. That really means a lot to me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And everyone else, feel free to check it out. We'll have stuff in the show notes, and again, you can just look on the internet. You'll probably find it. But until then, we are going to head back to the rest of the show.
My name is Laura Entravia, and this is Between the Lines. What is meter in music? We've talked a little about this abstract idea before. Wikipedia defines meter as regularly recurring patterns and accents, such as measures and beats. Unlike rhythm, metric onsets are not necessarily sounded, but are nevertheless expected by the listener. What does this mean? Meter is the pulse of the music. Whether we hear that pulse or not, a song that is composed with regular patterns of four does not need to hear each and every single beat or metric onset for us to perceive that it's patterns of four. In the track we're listening to right now, Clock Town Day 2 from Majora's Mask, we're clearly hearing patterns of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is aided by the accompanimental pattern in the accordion. But at this section of the song, there is no longer a pulse the way we heard it before. However, we still feel it, even if we don't literally hear it in an instrument somewhere. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those beats I whispered are still there. We felt those beats even without the accordion there to help us. That's meter, the feel of the pulse. I've spoken in previous episodes about the four basic types of meter: duple and triple, simple and compound. Duple and triple refer to the number of beats per measure, whereas simple and compound refer to the number of divisions per beat. So Clocktown's beat is 1, 2, 3, 4, and the division would be the accordion, basically. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So this would be an example of duple compound. 2 or 4 beats per measure, and the beats divide into 3. all beats are equal and all divisions are equal. But what about meters where the beats aren't equal lengths? I'm not talking about switching between compound and simple within a piece. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. The overall beat is still the same. And I'm not exactly talking about switching between duple and triple meters, that's simply changing the number of beats per measure. It doesn't change the length of the beats. I'm talking about a meter in which the length of the beats are uneven within a single measure of its time. I'm talking about asymmetric meter. What meter is this piece in? I'm hearing two large beats per measure. Which might, at first glance, suggest some kind of duple meter, meaning two beats per measure. But the beats seem to be different lengths. The first beat sounds like it has three divisions, whereas the second one only has two. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. This isn't a case of compound versus simple. That would sound like this. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, where the beats would be equal. In this piece, the divisions are an equal length, but the bigger beats themselves are not equal. This is the sound of an asymmetric meter. It might be hard to grasp on a first listen, but it would actually be relatively easy to spot on paper. In Western music, we have a system of visual notation called the time signature. It's represented by two numbers stacked vertically. The top number is the number of beats per measure. The bottom is which note value we should consider to be the beat. If we were looking at this piece on paper, we would most likely see a 5 over an 8, which would indicate 5 beats per measure, and the eighth note will be considered the beat. If the top number of the time signature is a prime number, 5, 7, 11, any number that can't be divided by anything except 1 and itself, it will be an asymmetric meter. Because if we tried to add that number of beats up into larger beats, those larger beats will be uneven, because those numbers don't divide equally. If this is starting to sound a little bit like a math lesson, you're right, meter is math. Now, before I go on, meter and time signature are not exactly synonymous. Meter is the word we use to describe the feeling of the pulse. The time signatures are actual numbers that we put down on paper to represent the meter in the most efficient visual way possible, to be read by musicians. I'm beating this into the ground because when it comes to meter, there are several ways to notate the exact same thing. This example we're listening to now, Imprisoned Phantom from Eternal Sonata, could be notated in 5/8. It could also be notated as 5/4, where the quarter note is considered the beat, or 5/16, where the 16th note gets the beat. It will sound the same when performed, but the ease of reading it on paper can depend very much on what type of note heads you're using and beaming and stuff. There are traditions that have developed over time as to what is the easiest to read. But that stuff isn't going to be so important for the purposes of this podcast because we're just listening to these examples. So I'm going to try to speak in very basic, non-specific terms like beat and division. However, at the end of each exercise, I will mention how I would notate this and hopefully be able to provide those written examples on my website. So check the description of the podcast for a link if you want to check it out. So, moving on. For me, when I'm analyzing music of any kind, the easiest way to figure out a piece's meter or meters is a three-step system. Step one is to listen for the biggest pattern. This can be a melodic, rhythmic, harmonic, any kind of repeating, recognizable idea that you can latch onto as the basis of the composition. Right now I'm tuning into the high ostinato. Da, 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 da. Step 2. Listen for the smallest constant division. In pieces that have asymmetric meter, the beats won't all be equal. So it's important to find the division that is constant to connect those larger beats you might be perceiving together. Da, 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 da. you probably heard me pulsing because there was a missing rhythmic onset on beat two. So I filled it in myself. Da 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 da. There's the division. Step 3. Count the number of divisions within what you hear as a single measure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So this example is in 5, or quintuple time. The 5 divisions add up into 2 larger uneven beats. Because of the relatively quick pace of the division, I would notate this in 5/8, or, alternatively, 3 plus 2 over 8. Fasten your seatbelts, it's more examples time. Ah, the classic World of Warcraft login music. Here we go. Step 1, find a big pattern. The drums are really helpful here. I found a beat, and I just noticed one of them is uneven. Step 2, listen for the division. Step 3, let's count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. This example is in 7, or septuple meter. The 7 divisions add up into 3 larger uneven beats, and because of the relatively quick pace of the division, I would notate this in 7/8, or 2 plus 2 plus 3 over 8. This is the winning results music from Mario Kart 64. Take a listen for a second. See if you can count it out yourself. If you're struggling a little bit, you are not alone. I admit, I never noticed this one until someone pointed it out to me a few years ago. That's how subtly this meter is handled. So let's go through the steps. Step 1, find a pattern. And if you're having trouble grasping onto something, sing along. Whatever you sing along is the thing that's jumping out to you the most. Dun, 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 dun. So that seems to be a repeating pattern there. Let's try to find the division out of that. Let's pulse it. Bum 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 ba dun 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 dun. So adding the pulsing in just now tuned me in a little more to these downbeats. Down. 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 So I'm starting to think that this whole pattern I was hearing is actually 2 measures long. I think if we count even 1/2 of this pattern, we'll know how many beats are in a measure. So I'm gonna try that, isolating 1 measure. Let's start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So I stopped when I heard that piano chord downbeat, right? Let's try again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Now let's keep counting. Let's see if it's continuous through all the measures. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's really hard to do, but you get the point. We're in 11-tuple time? I hardly ever have run into this meter. It's a weird one. But it's super cool when it's pulled off right. When I heard this piece as a kid, I just subconsciously assumed there was some sort of syncopated duple time going on here, because we have a couple of offbeats. Bum, bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 ba-dum, bum. But at a closer glance, it's clearly in 11/8. Asymmetric meter isn't always in your face. Sometimes it's just a gentle feeling. And just when we thought we were getting the hang of this, oh boy! Step 1, find a big pattern. So I'm latching onto the timpani a little bit. But I'm having trouble counting it, and I'm already noticing that every other measure seems to be a different length. So let's go a step down into the division, which is step two anyway. Let me try adding in some numbers. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. So I was right, the measures are two different lengths. At this point, you would add up how many divisions are in each measure, and I'll save you the time. It's 13 and 10. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. 3 plus 3 plus 3 plus 4 equals 13. 3 plus 3 plus 4 equals 10. So what is this? Could we just add all those numbers together and get 23 over 16? You could. Absolutely, you could notate it like that. But 23 is a very large number to have to keep in one's head while counting a fast-paced song like this. Not only that, but there are two clearly delineated patterns at play here. The succession of the measures never changes. It's always 13, 10, 13, 10. It makes me think that it's not one continuous pattern of 23 necessarily, but two alternating patterns mixed together. And that's a new term, mixed meter. Wikipedia defines it as using a different time signature at the beginning of each bar, resulting in music with an extremely irregular rhythmic feel. So again, we're back to that distinction between meter and time signature. Mixed meter is something we use as a notational tool. You could write a piece in 47 beats per measure if you wanted. You could totally do that, but that would be really hard to count, and musicians are gonna screw up a lot if they had to play it. So it would behoove you, as a composer, to maybe break it down into groups, especially if those groups of different divisions of 47 repeat. So instead of having one giant measure for every 47 beats, you might have some continuous patterns, maybe 6-8, 7-8, 4-8, 5-8, and then all of those numbers would add up to 47. That would be easier to read. That's really the purpose of mixed meter. But it has a broader definition. It can refer to pieces that simply have a lot of meters thrown together with no particular pattern. So say hello to Doom Dragon. Everyone give Pokerus Project on Twitter a huge high five for sending me this song, because it was a huge inspiration for this entire episode. Gosh dang, this song is wild. There is so much going on here on every level of the composition that it's almost overwhelming, but it's an absolutely glowing example of mixed meter. Symmetric and asymmetric meters are mixed together freely and create an unbelievable whirlwind of energy in this manic and unhinged piece. The meter changes almost sound completely random, and in some ways it probably is. The composer probably intuitively wanted to change meters in spots where it just felt cool. But it has a really wonderful effect on where we feel the beat. It feels like the ground is constantly shifting beneath your feet, like you're being yanked around in all directions, never able to sit still. The measures in quintuple time in particular, which come up the most, create that push and pull feeling. The beat division is constant at all times, so this piece is in variations of 5-8, 7-8, 6-8, 8-8, which we would call 4-4 or common time, all thrown together. But the divisions add up into different lengths of bigger beats, all of them uneven and irregular and changing lengths from measure to measure. The coolest thing about this piece is how the divisions add up into different length beats, so I'm going to clap the larger beats and count the divisions aloud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1,
and we've looped. It's pretty wild, right? I actually never expected to find a song that's more metrically complex than Ganondorf Battle, but this may have done it. They're different in a lot of ways, but this was quite an extraordinary journey. I wish I had the time to transcribe the whole thing so you could see exactly what's happening in each measure, but in lieu of that, I'm actually thinking of putting up a video of myself conducting the beat patterns so you can visually see how much the beat is lurching and careening around from measure to measure. So look in the podcast description. I don't know if I'll have time, but it will be there if I had time to do it. Now that we've gone through 30,000 examples of asymmetric meter, let's talk about how we would actually experience these pieces in-game. I'm a musician. I study music theory. I find it fun to pick this stuff apart. My brain immediately tunes into these things and tries to figure out the nitty-gritty details the minute I hear it. But for a player who is in the game fighting a doom dragon, they're probably not going to notice, ahaha, that was clearly a measure of 7-8 thrown in there, or I appreciate your classic use of 2316, Ganondorf. Like I mentioned at the very beginning, we feel meter, rather than actively counting it. So let's take a break from all the math for a second. How did these pieces make us feel as players? When used with low-key instrumentation, especially plucked strings and hand drums, it can sound like a lost folk song. Something about the rough edges of the meter gives it a provincial, indigenous feel. With heavier percussion and seething, malevolent orchestration, it can sound like the drums of war leading a massive army to battle or a call to arms. With a laid-back, funky groove, it can be interesting without overwhelming the listener. It can be relaxing yet upbeat, a sort of, ah, I did it, feeling. And in faster pieces, the irregularity sounds crazy and off-kilter. The push and pull of the long versus short beats creates a sense of too fast to keep up, he's gaining on me feeling. Perfect for intense boss battles, especially when the player appears to be at a serious disadvantage to the strength of his or her enemy. Players who are completely engrossed in the game might not notice a piece is in septuple meter, the same way I didn't realize that Mario Kart piece was in 11-8 when I was a kid. But I noticed something was really cool and funky about it, even if I couldn't put my finger on it at the time. And I can imagine players of Golden Sun would probably feel the stutter-step rhythm of quintuple meter, and it will make them feel off balance and anxious, even if they don't know exactly why. And as always, that's the point of video game music, to engross us in the game, and transform us as the players into the characters we're controlling on screen. The use of asymmetric meter, either subtly or absolutely in your face, can be a remarkably effective means to that end. I'll probably revisit this topic in the future because there are so many more examples that I can think of even now, and I bet some of you have heard pieces before that I don't even know, that maybe you've always felt was a little bit different but never sat down and counted it out. Please feel free to send it to me or leave the links in the comments on this podcast because I would love to take a look at some more examples. In the meantime, I hope this episode maybe opened up your ears a little bit more. Meter is my absolute favorite thing to talk about in music, it really is. So I hope you enjoyed listening to me geek out about it as much as I did geeking out about it. Thank you so much for listening, and have fun counting!
What a show.
Wait a second, Brian, judging by your logic from before, is a show the opposite of show?
Yes. What show is when our show is good?
Oh.
What a show is when our show is bad? So you can look back on the archives of episodes and realize how pleased we are with our work.
I am under no false pretenses that our personal performance as hosts has been anything but bad today.
Well, I mean, I would call it a professional, but I'm not sure I would call it bad.
But I will vouch that the quality of the content in this episode, the interview with Funk Fiction, fascinating. Mm-hmm. Then we rolled right into Between the Lines. Great job, Pejman. Great job, Laura. Yep. You guys were like the best guests ever.
That's great, but given I haven't heard that yet, I'm going to assume my hosting was way better.
You know what, Brian? You're free to do that.
Yep.
And you're only hurting yourself.
If you want to not hurt yourself, you can head over to www.ocremix.org for more cool tunes.
Find all those healing beats at ocremix.org. Yep. You can also find us
like
on
Lucio.
Twitter at what?
Like Lucio.
Like Lucio, yes. You can also find us on Twitter at OCR Podcast. And also note that you can find a pinned tweet that links you to our Discord channel over there.
Yeah, and you can email us at podcast@ocremix.org.
And thanks again to Pejman and Laura for being the best guests ever. I'm just kidding, other guests. You're equally the best guests. But I think it was a pretty strong show.
This compliment doesn't mean as much.
Yeah, I guess not. What a guest. What a guest.
Anyway, let's move on to the playlist.
The playlist is a weekly collection of listener-submitted recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is Sonic the Hedgehog Remix.
Shifting Islands, originally from Sonic the Hedgehog, remixed by My Earth, Halsey, and Protodome, and submitted by Black Doom.
Chemix Tricks, originally from Sonic the Hedgehog 2, remixed by Prototype Raptor and submitted by Stalky.
Clockwork Criminal, originally from Sonic the Hedgehog, remixed by Will Rock and submitted by Tamias222.
Next, My Generation, originally from Sonic the Hedgehog 2, remixed by Analog, and submitted by Square Evil.
Chaos Nightmares, originally from Sonic Adventure, remixed by Prototype Raptor, and submitted by Joseph G.
Blobby Blob Disco, originally from Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, remixed by Jive Master, and submitted by Patchpin.
The Glacier's Peak, originally from Sonic Advance, remixed by JMR and submitted by Yami.
Time Traveler's Delight, originally from Sonic CD, remixed by Overclock Disassembled, and submitted by Phoenix Down.
To the whole world right now. Let's turn it up and get down. Come on, north, south, east, west. Let me see you bob your heads. Yo, Memphis, turn it up and get down.
I remember where I come from. The same spot where the snare drum rocks. Feel it in my blood. Not ripping silly thugs. Keeping it 100. My stock staying fully plugged.
Probably the lovely in breath. Living my peak interest.
Objects at rest remain so. Up until the fourth of meta is felt. Moving at the speed of mics. Recite text.
Ahead of my time. I'm never ahead of myself.
Don't you know time is one big loop? You can run a Mobius strip around two troops. You can stay ahead of the curve and still grip roots. So you do you, even if it's old school. My kicks quit. The track jacket at speed to the windmills. B-boys fully equipped to channel the sound. Yo, we're gonna rock.
I was feeling kind of manic in a Palm Tree panic, so I changed my sadness to metallic madness. Rolling on a freeway, the Stardust Speedway, whipping like a boss in collision chaos. The tidal tempest is coastal bound, but I know the fastest thing around. So whip out the wacky workbench, open the ports, and plot a course to the quadrant of course. Now I wasn't born a time not long ago. The Mega CD had all the flow. While Mario was blip blopping, Sonic Team was hip hopping, cranking out fly tunes way before iTunes. The audio and the video. Yo, it's smooth. You can do anything with all the groove. Every now and then I'll pull it off the shelf just to remind me to believe in myself.
To the whole world right now.
Whoa.
Just turn it up and get down.
Yeah.
North, south, east, west. Let me see you bob your heads. Yo, DJ Valentine.
Turn it up and get down.
You old fool, you weren't gonna see me? Please, no. Keep me from jumping strong on this song. Like a cool night breeze, we night breed. Stardust, night sky, light speed.
Yo,
let's break the sound barriers. Everybody locked in, let the sound carry us. We celebrate and levitate with one aim to elevate and escape the mundane. Oh, little planet, we made you this song. So pump up the jam, now jump the dam on. We leap and land strong. How does it sound on this outbound platform?
Nice.
This track be your guidance with the overclock crew. Is your designated pilots. Cosmic eternally bound. Yo, Oracle, turn it up and get down.
With a signal in the sky, superfly. Don't you doubt I'm on sea, I'm bridging the gap like a nasty Nas album. Digit metaphys become a stand united like the states. Break your walls down, call on my 2J. We don't play, but when we do, we go hard. Berserker for brass, funkin' like please bass guitar. 16 bars for superstars or superheroes. Overclock to seven legend stage, just like Rob De Niro. This hip-hop heat out of a silver lining playbook. The nice clock, what nights, we taking that rock. Get on the mic, spit it live, leave these Eggman shook. Running laps around the track, call it my sonic. Oh look, I want the whole world dancing. Don't act proud, so I'm turning up a couple notches. Boogie down to the ground, kicking dope rhymes like judo since the day I was born. Drifting level four on the beat, I'm all star transformed. Shout it out.
Press Garden Zone, originally from Sonic Mania, remixed by Funk Fiction and submitted by Funk Fiction.
We'll be right back.
You have been listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is DS and 3DS. Nintendo's family of dual-screen handhelds are home to a whole gaggle of great music, so start hunting. To submit your suggestions,
or just say how do you do,
hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast. Email us at podcast@ocremix.org, or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom.
Don't you know, time is one big loop. You can run a Mobius strip around two truths. You can stay ahead of the curve and still grip roots. So you do you, even if it's old school.